Welcome to the Take Three podcast, where we talk about whatever we want with movies, around movies, having to do with movies, just movies. I'm Ben Thompson.
I'm Tess Brewer.
And I'm Adam Cooper.
And today we decided to talk about two directors who mean a lot to us, I think, on a certain level. At least one of them does, to most of us.
I would say both of them.
Yeah.
To us, that's the three of us anyway.
Mm-hmm. Those are Noah Baumbach and Greta Gerwig. Last year, of course, they both were nominated for Best Screenplay. And
they both should have been nominated for Best Director, but...
You know. Yeah, and honestly, Greta should have been nominated for a lot more that year.
Yes.
But, you know,
Academy. Greta got the shaft, which is terrible because she is fantastic.
Yeah. But that's neither here nor there. We wanted to look at their careers. Now, obviously, Noah's had a longer career than Greta, but I think Greta's made some giant splashes and has really cemented herself in the film world with just the two movies that she's made. Hell, she was huge after only making one movie, which I think speaks to her talent and her, like, voice.
I completely agree, but I also do want to point out, not just directing, obviously she does have a story in acting and writing, which is very important to bring into note as her as a filmmaker in general.
Uh-huh. But we just kind of wanted to talk to them and, you know, at the end, compare and contrast them, because they are very similar in ways, but they're also very different writers and filmmakers.
And they also are partners. They have a child together, which is just, you know, interesting.
Yeah, and that is clear in like Francis Ha, their relationship. That movie, you can really kind of see him falling in love with Greta on screen.
I question that, but we don't have to talk about it just now.
Okay, we're going to talk about both of them separately first and kind of go over our broad thoughts on their directing style, their storytelling, their themes. And we're going to start with Noah because he's the freshest on our minds. All three of us spent the past day or two watching his movies that were available to us. So for me, that was Kicking and Screaming, The Meyerowitz Stories, Marriage Story, Squid and the Whale, and Francis Ha.
For me, I watched Francis Ha, Squid and the Whale. I have already seen Marriage Story, and then I started Meyerowitz Stories and Kicking and Screaming, as well as that. I know we're talking about Noah, but I did also watch Lady Bird.
I've seen all of those except for Squid and the Whale.
So Noah Baumbach, he's a very personal filmmaker, and I want to kind of start on that. He puts himself almost completely autobiographically into his films, and at the very least, one of his characters will be very much based on him.
Yes.
I think that's the clearest in Marriage Story and The Squid and the Whale, but Meyerowitz and Kicking and Screaming certainly have shades of Noah in their protagonists.
They all have... Like, a lot of them have, for example, there'll be someone who is divorced or separated, whether that be about, in an instance of Squid and the Whale, that's relating to his parents and how he struggled with that as a child, versus Marriage Story, with that being his own divorce, or even in other movies such as Meyerowitz Stories, when there are characters who are getting separated. And then they also happen to be, a lot of the times, struggling artists of some form. Like, sometimes they're filmmakers, or sometimes they're working on plays, on music, on art, like...
A novel.
But yeah, a novel.
It's always some sort of commentary on filmmakers, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Or artists in general. I thought it was very interesting in Meyerowitz Stories. I noticed another pattern, which is his relationship to his father. Because in The Squid and the Whale, you see, I think the character... why am I forgetting his name? Jesse Eisenberg's character.
Walter.
If you're looking at Walter, he idolizes his father, and he tries to be like him, and he tries to speak like him, imitate him. And obviously, over the course of the movie, that kind of gets soured. But, and then in Meyerowitz Stories, you almost see a grown-up version of Walter in Matthew, because Matthew is regretful of having kind of idolized his father and been the quote-unquote favorite, because the father in Squid and the Whale, like, kind of favors Walter, because his younger son is a Philistine in the father's eyes.
And in fact, it's made a point in Squid and the Whale where it's very much shown that Frank, who is Walter's younger brother and the youngest son of these two getting divorced, his favorite is the mom and they have their own relationship. And then Walter's favorite is the father. And they progressively, it's really interesting. Like, you see it more from Walter's perspective, because even the audience, you see, I feel that Walter's father is the more innocent. Like, you see right from the beginning that his mother had affairs for years, and you see her as more of the villain. But when the movie goes on, you realize that they both did things. Neither one of them are to blame. They're both to blame, just as Walter finds that out as well.
Yeah, I honestly think that even from the beginning, the dad is just not a good person, though. Like,
he's not, but I feel like he's given more favor in the beginning. Because, again, like, that's at least what I got.
I thought he was, like, kind of an asshole in the beginning. He was very just dismissive of everything that...
He was very dismissive, and he was an asshole. But still, the character, Walter, was looking up to him. And when you look at it, like, yes, he is dismissive and a jerk. But compare that to his wife who had affairs, you know? And I feel in the beginning, she is more of the villain. But then as the movie goes on, she becomes a lot more sympathetic, and you realize that she is not like this terrible mother and wife.
Tess, I want you to jump in here too, because I saw a lot of, the father's name is Bernard in Squid and the Whale. I saw a lot of that character in Dustin Hoffman's character in the Meyerowitz stories, and I kind of want to talk about that.
Character of the father?
Yes, like the self-centeredness and the like...
I think there was fear in the children that they were becoming their father. And that I can see that in the aggressiveness and the anger that they all had, and also the fear that they had that they didn't want to be like him, but they also were inspired by his success. So there was this push and pull, like this tug with that, because they wanted to be like him, but they also did not want to be like him in two different
ways.
I think that he was Baumbach. I don't know what Baumbach's father was like.
Noah Baumbach's father, his name is Jonathan Baumbach, who he himself is like somewhat of a famous person. Just off the Wikipedia article, Jonathan Baumbach was an American author, academic, and film critic. So he worked for multiple universities and colleges. He has been married a grand total of 4 times. Like, that it was kind of mentioned in both of Meyerowitz stories and in Squid and the Whale that the father had previous marriages, and that they were academics. And they worked at universities, so...
Matthew had that line in the Meyerowitz stories where he's like, yeah, raising a kid and having a relationship is really hard. And his father goes like, oh, I wouldn't know that. And then Matthew goes, Dad, you've been divorced 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
That was... I think that's a very important...
It's a great line.
Speaking of great lines, I think just Noah Baumbach as a dialogue writer is so great. Like, he's very funny and very mean at the same time.
It was very Kafka-esque.
Well, yeah. It was written by Kafka.
That's a line from Squid and the Whale.
Yeah. My favorite line from Squid and the Whale. Why is it my favorite? I think it's just a funny line. It's also like informed by the character. The son is talking to his girlfriend, and the son wants to be like his father, and his father's very intellectual and pretentious.
Pretentious and snobby.
Yeah, so he kind of takes phrases that his father says, and he has his girlfriend read The Metamorphosis by, is it Frank or Franz Kafka?
It's Franz Kafka.
Okay, Franz Kafka. So he has his girlfriend read The Metamorphosis by Franz Kafka, and she does, and she says, oh, it's really interesting. And he says, yeah, it's very Kafka-esque. And she goes, well, yeah.
That makes more sense.
Uh-huh. So I think the most I noticed, like, the funny dialogue and the snappy dialogue was in Kicking and Screaming.
Which is a comedy, where the other ones are more dramedies, if not just full-blown dramas, so it makes sense.
Yeah, I thought that one was very funny, even though it was pretty mean, too. I thought the character in Kicking and Screaming of Max was... I had fun watching him up until the end of that movie. And we're going to spoil all of these.
Try our best not to.
But
we'll spoil some of them.
Basically, Max gets, like, his big old character ending is that he starts dating somebody who in the movie mentions that she's 17 years old.
I don't like that. That's...
They go to prom together.
Yeah, and he's 22, though. I don't know. But I think another thing I really like about Noah Baumbach is that all of his movies are structured very purposefully, and everything in the film has a purpose. With Squid and the Whale, you've got this exhibit at the Natural History Museum.
Where I really liked that part of the movie.
A squid and a whale fighting. I thought that was brilliant, because in his monologue, he said, oh, we always went to the museum, and whenever the squid when the whale would fight, I would cover my eyes.
That line was like really well written, and like it perfectly encapsulates the movie. And I think that monologue is probably the best part of that entire movie.
Especially because at the end, he does go to the museum and he does look at that exhibit. I think that was a brilliant character journey.
Oh, and that's a great way to end the movie. And again, just the idea, because like a child with these two people fighting, or it's in creatures in the movie, but obviously it's a metaphor for his parents fighting. It's just really well explained that like he doesn't even want to open his eyes. He's hiding behind his hands. And like, I think that is some of the best writing in any of his movies. Just that one monologue. It's really well done.
So I wanted to mention this because I like this about Noah's movies. The beginning of his movies always sets the map for the rest of the movie. Like, there's always a line or like a thing about the scene that sets up the rest of the movie. For example, and these won't be spoilers because they just go over general themes of the movie, but Squid and the Whale, it begins with the family playing tennis against each other. And the first line is, "You and Mom versus me and Dad." Take Francis Ha. It begins with them play fighting in the park, which of course, throughout the course of the movie, Francis and a roommate start to drift apart and kind of have a falling out. Of course, they reconcile at the end.
Yeah.
Take something like Meyerowitz Stories, where Danny is trying to find a parking spot while visiting his dad. And to me, that was like a metaphor for him trying to find his place in his dad's heart, because that's his major conflict in the movie. And then Marriage Story, where it begins with them reading letters that they wrote to each other about how, like, what they love about the other.
I love that scene so much. It's just so powerful, like, that you get to see this love between these two people and what their relationship was and spending time with their child. And then it cuts to what it actually is, but it really does encapsulate the feelings that these people are going through very well, I feel.
Yes. I am a huge fan of his. I love circular storytelling, and I love that, the circular storytelling. And also because you go back and you're like, oh man, like watching it again gives it more meaning, because you've seen that, you've seen it to the end, so you can watch it again and understand the circular meaning. So.
Yeah.
So let me ask you two this. What is your favorite film by Noah Baumbach?
Madagascar 3.
I mean, for those of you who don't know, yes, Noah Baumbach wrote Madagascar 3, Europe's Most Wanted. It is his magnum opus.
He did like 60 pages of
it. He has a writing credit.
But for real, I think Marriage Story is my favorite. I believe it's his, it's an encapsulation of everything he's done in his career, and it's his most well-made movie. But I really also have a very soft spot in my heart for the Meyerowitz Stories.
I really liked, for me, it has to be Marriage Story as well. I think that one is fantastic. It is his best movie, I feel. It made all three of us cry,
and our friends.
And I think it's just very emotional. It's his most raw movie, I feel. And then I also want to give a shout out to Francis Ha. I know I liked this more than you, Ben. I don't know how much you liked Francis Ha, Tess, but I really enjoyed that.
I really liked it. I had trouble at the beginning, like getting into the flow of, because she was just very quirky, and I had trouble getting into the flow.
Oh, she's very quirky and awkward. And like some of the scenes, and like it wasn't perfect. Like there were some parts when I was like, some of the dialogue was weird, or some of the acting was weird. But like overall, I think that one was a really strong movie as well. It's on Netflix. I really recommend it. I really thoroughly enjoyed it as well.
So what was your favorite, Tess?
I can say I know what my least favorite was. My least favorite was Cooking and Screaming.
Okay.
In terms of favorite, I feel like Meyerowitz was probably the most enjoyable watch I had. I did. Like, it was emotional, but I still felt like it was the resolutions and the character story arcs and everything. It was just very satisfactory. It was satisfactory for me. And then Marriage Story, that was satisfactory, but it was just so sad. It just hit me so bad. I can't say I have a favorite or that one that's my favorite, but I can say one that I like the least.
So why did you like Kicking and Screaming the least?
Because there wasn't really a true resolution, and I get that kind of is the point but also the characters, I just dislike them. I dislike the characters. I didn't feel a lot of sympathy, and I wanted to, because I just didn't feel sympathetic. And I thought that it was more one of his more egotistical pieces. Like Ben said, he was kind of putting himself a lot into that one. And I think he was doing it, he was aware of it too, and that made it kind of even worse. So I liked it. It was like, it's well done. The quotes are really good. It was pretty funny.
I'm the guy that girls it was, like
it made
to
me
hug.
Uncomfortable in a way that I can't really explain. And I
thought it was uncomfortable too, but that's because out of all of these, that's the closest one that I'll be experiencing soon. Because these are all written about points in Noah Baumbach's life. And, you know, it's harder for me to relate to being, say, like, you know, Danny or Matthew from Marriage Story, where they're like in their 40s and they're dealing with the, you know, end of their father's mortal clock. But with Kicking and Screaming, that's a reality all three of us will be facing in about 3-4 years.
Not to mention, we did just graduate high school, so we get something of that, but well, it's different.
Oh, no, I think it's much different than graduating high school, because high school, it's like you saying goodbye. Kicking and Screaming, I know you didn't get too much into it, but Kicking and Screaming is about graduating from college and not being sad that you leave everything behind, but like not knowing what to do next.
I get that.
And how like they spend 6 months of this movie still living in the house that they bought near campus, still kind of going to campus. I was talking about it with our friend Blake, actually, and I think he summed it up best when he said, if you can get into the college bars legally, then there's something wrong with you. But that one made me uncomfortable because it's a reality that I will be facing soon. And because I am somebody who does not really, I'm not comfortable with taking big risks quite yet, kind of like the characters of Kicking and Screaming, I can definitely see me being in that position, although not as sad. I'm not going to go back to school, like I'm not going to go back to campus. I'm not going to like, you know, re-enroll in college.
Okay, but that's Frances Ha.
What do you mean?
She goes back to college. She becomes an RA.
Well, to be fair, she doesn't do that because she loves college. I know. She does that because she needs money.
She has no money. She needs to be paid.
But the characters of...
kind of like reverts back. Like she kind of rewinds, goes back, and then... I don't know. I like that. I kind of like that. I could see her like...
I will say... A big part of that movie was people saying that she looks old, but yet she's very immature. And I think that is a factor in that. And there's even a scene when she goes back to that, where she's talking to a student. She's talking about how weird it is that she's there, and how the student's like, I thought you had to go here to do this job.
Yeah.
I also...
Frances Ha is more funny than Kicking and Screaming person, because it's it's less self-aware. Kicking and Screaming is too self-aware, and Frances Ha is like, it takes Greta's energy and it, and I like that better with that.
That's why I said at the beginning that Frances Ha was basically Noah Baumbach falling in love with Greta Gerwig as they were making the movie, because it really is a movie that plays to all of Greta Gerwig's, not just strengths as a performer and a writer, but also I believe, and I don't know these people personally, but I believe he wanted to show the world what he saw in Greta Gerwig as a person.
They were together at that point,
well,
right?
I think that Greta made it her movie.
And exactly. And Noah allowed her to do it.
I guess that's a sign of love, but I also think...
Were they together when the movie came out? When did they start?
They got together pretty... I mean, I'm not sure.
Hold on. 2011, they became partners. So, and the movie came out in 2012. So around the time of the production is when they were.
I also wanted to point out what I think is the biggest proof of like Noah Baumbach kind of falling in love with Greta Gerwig. The scene where it's just her like dancing around the streets of New York while Modern Love plays. Mm-hmm. I think that is, you know, him saying she is my love, you know?
That seems a stretch.
There's actually...
I think it's just her loving herself.
Yeah, I mean...
I think that's also true. And there's actually a
The point I can see with that is that he lets her love herself in that movie. Through that. Mm-hmm.
But also, you can kind of see him kind of like... It's self-love, yes, but it's also like...
Well, I think it can be both. I think it can be both, because one, it doesn't necessarily have to just agree with, like, the actress, just because the actress and the director, yes, they work together. I don't know if there's always all that connection, whether it be self-love or relationship love. I do think a major point of the movie is that she never does date anyone. Like, there's kind of hints that maybe she'll go out with someone, but it never really sticks. And I think it is also important to note that this movie, Frances Ha, was written by both Noah Baumbach and Greta Gerwig. And in fact, funny side note, when the time I figured that out was not before I started watching it, but when I was watching the movie, and then she goes home to Sacramento, which is something we will get into when we're talking about Greta. But it was at that point I'm like, did she write this? And I looked it up, and yes, she co-wrote this movie.
Yeah.
I think that this Frances Ha was just a celebration of life, and I know I said it was.
Yeah, that's vague.
That's vague. Like it's, that. It's not that
Greta's life.
Okay. I just said life. Like, I mean, it doesn't. Obviously, films are never just about one thing. So it is about Greta shining as this performer and writer. It is also about the character of Frances Ha living her life and going through the conflicts with her roommates. It's about self-love. It's about, you know, the director's love for this woman. It's about living in New York in that time of her life. It's about a lot of things. And I think, but the big encapsulation of it is celebrating like this person, this character, because I think Frances was very much based on Greta, mainly because Noah and her wrote it. And both of them are filmmakers who put a lot of their own self into their characters. Before we move on to Greta, I want to mention one thing that has one actor that's been consistent in a few Noah Baumbach movies. Adam Driver.
Every single one.
What a...
It's weird.
He is a fantastic actor. He was in... So I know he's in Frances Ha and Marriage Story. Are there any others he's in?
In Meyerowitz Stories.
Is he in Meyerowitz Stories?
He is in Meyerowitz.
I watched part of that movie, so I didn't get to that point.
The main character.
He's only in one scene, but I think no one knows how to use Adam Driver better than any filmmaker I've seen.
Oh, so you're saying he's better than J.J. Abrams or Ryan Johnson at using Adam Driver?
Yes. I love what he does with Adam Driver. Not just that it was in one of Noah's movies that Adam Driver gave one of the best performances of his career, but
if
also,
not the best.
Yes, but also I thought him in Meyerowitz Story was one of the funniest things I've seen Adam Driver do, where he just comes in and like reacts, like the way he just reacts to everything that character says is so funny. Like, he's like, okay, we can get you the pool. And then he raises his hands up and he's like, but we can't get it to you yet. And he goes, and like lowers his hands. Just, it's so funny. I love that.
I want to point out, so for me, as much as I love Joaquin Phoenix, I think he's a great actor. And I think his Joker performance was fantastic. I thought Adam Driver should have gotten the Oscar for Best Actor this past year, and I stand by that. Because in Marriage Story, he is fantastic. The emotions are raw, they're real. He does an incredible job in that movie.
He'll have his time.
Oh, he will? I'm just saying, in that movie, if you haven't seen it, do yourself a favor and watch Marriage Story. I'm sure everyone has seen that scene on Twitter, the fight scene. It's unreal. It's just, it's real. It's unreal because it's real.
Right.
You could kind of see Noah, like in that scene in particular where Charlie and Nicole are fighting with each other, you can almost imagine Noah sitting at the typewriter, like taking a moment to like collect himself emotionally as he's writing that, because like it just felt like
you write on a typewriter.
Well, I can imagine if any filmmaker does, I think it's gonna be Noah Baumbach.
Okay.
I mean, this guy, his movies are very hipster-ish.
I like that about his movies is that they are really hipster, but the culture, like the cultured part of it is like in the background. Like,
yeah,
I'm cultured. I know things about art.
Yeah, I love that as well.
And I know philosophers, and I'm just going to insert them in here. But
yeah,
it's also like subtle. I think the subtlety of him is just very subtle.
It's... The only other writer I can compare this to is Aaron Sorkin, except it's not as obnoxious as Aaron Sorkin, where like I feel like every third line of an Aaron Sorkin movie or TV show is somebody quoting some like old Russian war novel in relation to whatever's going on. Or like, sorry, I'm on an Aaron Sorkin tangent, but I feel like every Aaron Sorkin character majored in both like politics and European literature history. Anyway, moving on. I want to talk about Greta now. Is there anything else you want to say about Noah before we start on Greta?
Great filmmaker. Can't wait to see what he has next.
Tess?
I agree with that. I think he's maturing like a fine wine.
I agree.
Greta Gerwig. She's made two movies, but those
directed two movies.
Yes, directed. Written and directed.
Actually, technically, I was about to say, technically three, because she did co-direct another movie.
Yeah, but...
She co-directed.
Something that was described as mumblecore on Wikipedia.
What? I'm looking this up.
Okay.
But Little Women and Lady Bird are the two movies that come to mind now when you talk about Greta Gerwig, and for very good reason. They're both fantastic.
I want to give context for Greta Gerwig and kind of how big of a deal she is. She's made two movies, and both of those movies have been nominated for Best Picture. She exploded on like the directing scene in 2017. And although Lady Bird didn't win any Oscars,
which is a shame because it's great, but we'll get into that.
Yeah. You could tell that everybody had nothing but the highest of respect for Greta. I just want to like pull up like the other nominees for Best Director that year, just to show like kind of how the fact that she was considered that year. It was 2017. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that. Well, I actually have, but it's one of her contemporaries, Jordan Peele, where it's like somebody who we've had a previous relationship with as a non-director, suddenly coming out with a film and instantly erasing that relationship we had and creating an entirely new relationship. Nobody thinks about Greta Gerwig as an actor anymore. Nobody thinks about Jordan Peele as a comedian anymore. They are two basically auteur directors. And I think that's crazy that that happened, honestly. And I love that it happened because I love talent. I don't know.
And for good reason, they're both very fantastic. And we're both very disappointingly shafted at the Oscars this past year.
Yeah, I just want to... So I pulled up the page where... of Best Director. She was nominated up against Guillermo del Toro, who won, Christopher Nolan, Jordan Peele, and Paul Thomas Anderson.
That was a fantastic list.
Yeah, and that was the year that people thought James Franco was going to be there too, for Disaster Artist.
That was also a great movie. Off topic, but great movie.
Yeah, but I love Greta Gerwig, and I guess, I know I've been talking a lot, but I will begin. Watching Lady Bird is a fantastic experience for me. Just absolutely phenomenal film.
Lady Bird, I completely agree. I just watched it. It is one of the best movies I have seen in a long time.
I think... So, I believe... Did all of us go to Catholic parochial schools when we were younger? Or at least high schools?
I went to a Catholic high school for a grand total of one semester.
I know, but I've been raised Catholic. So
I went to Catholic grade school, Catholic high school. And let me
and
tell you...
also, I was about to say, we all go to the same Catholic college, so...
I mean, whatever. I don't think that part's relevant.
Still, Jesuit, but, you know, whatever.
Anyway, it's insane how accurate she got it.
Yeah, I agree with that.
There were a lot of moments that I laughed at because of how much I could relate to it. The abortion assembly.
That scene, I remember sitting in school at my old Catholic high school, and they took us out and they gave us an assembly about abortions where they would show us like aborted fetuses and trying to scare us, basically. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The teachers too were very realistic, especially the math teacher, because I think the misconception is that, you know, these Catholic private schools will only hire like nuns and like older teachers, but you always had that one young math teacher who was just really kind of charming and chill.
For me, that was my art teacher. Yeah, one of my art teachers.
It was my math teacher. But other than that, I also think I related to it on the level of just the family situation that Lady Bird was in. I thought it was a very good movie about my point in my life. Everything from like the school part, the family part, the friends part, the romance part, the even the school play stuff. It was just great. I really, really had a deep connection to it. And I watched it as I was after I had completed my first semester of college. So it's not like I had watched it when, like, you know, before coming to college and it had that even deeper resonance with me. But I still could remember that time when I was in Lady Bird's shoes.
Yeah. Every time, like in her, when there was a scene in her high school, I remembered the Catholic high school I went to, even though it was one semester, and be in her home too. You know, I've had conversations with my parents like that she has had, you know, and like having trouble relating to your parents or fighting with them all the time or not seeing eye to eye. I 100% understand that. But yeah, you know, still loving each other. And I think there's a scene I want to talk about. It's so spoiler for part, like, this isn't like a main spoiler, but it's like a subplot. So she has a boyfriend in the earlier parts of the movie named Danny. What's it?
I don't know. I think so. Was it Lucas Hedges' character?
It was her first boyfriend, yeah.
Yeah, Lucas.
Anyway, at a cast party at a restaurant or whatever, like, the cast of the play they were in is hanging out, which is something that I can relate to, you know, going to restaurants after a play. And then, well, she walks into the women's bathroom, but there's, like, a line, so she goes to the men's bathroom and to go use the bathroom. And she walks in on her boyfriend making out with another boy. And she leaves upset because obviously her boyfriend was cheating on her. But later when he talks to her, like, she's mad that he was cheating, but she's forgiving and understanding. Like, when he, you know, accepts that and she's like, you're gay, he is okay with that. He's supportive of him. And she's like hugging him and understanding. And when he asks her not to tell anyone and to give him time to be able to come out, she's completely understanding. And by the end of the movie, they're friends.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty powerful. Now, Tess, I want to hear what you have to say, but I also want to like kind of interject one thing. Another part I really related to was the other side of the tracks aspect of this movie. I don't mean to get personal, but at this point we're talking about Noah Baumbach and Greta Gerwig, so it's inevitable. I've been in that situation where we've not necessarily been poor, but like we're paying for an expensive school and we can't necessarily get all the luxuries that the other kids at school have. So I've been in those kind of conversations where like, oh, you're ungrateful, this, that. And instead of feeling phony and overdramatized, it felt very real. And that was the realest I've seen it, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, Tess.
I just want to say, yeah, but Tess, I agree with what you're saying.
I think it was a very good coming of age movie. I watched it the summer before freshman year of college. And I didn't know what to expect of it. I just saw it was on Amazon Prime and I was like, oh, cool, watch this. And it was inspired by a strong female character who was also emotional, because I think a lot of times, I don't know, I don't see that a lot, and I like seeing that, because that's how it really is you know, feel like you have to either be completely stoic or you're, like, incredibly vulnerable. But I loved the ability for, like, Greta understands female vulnerability as well as female strength, and she ties that really well together in that movie. And I don't know, I was inspired by that, and I was inspired by the character growth in that movie as well, and the relationship that Lady Bird had with her mother was also both her mother and her father. I thought that it was very realistic, and I don't know, I just it struck me. It struck a chord. It was a good
movie. Actually, I'd like you to elaborate on the relationship with her parents thing, because I've heard this movie described by a lot of people, and the reason it works so well is that it's one of the best and only mother-daughter movies. And the only way I could kind of see that was from my experience seeing my sisters and my mother. And obviously, Adam and I are both men. Did it like really get the mother-daughter relationship experience in teenage years?
Yes. I think so. I think it was interesting to see an even-tempered male, like an even-tempered father and a more less even-tempered mother, because I think that's often not the way. It's usually the father who's less even-tempered and everything. But I really think that was, I don't know, I think that's why it was a mother-daughter movie. And I think that because she butt heads with her mom a lot more than she did with her dad. And sometimes that is how it goes. I mean, usually there's, you know, one of your parents, usually you get along with better than the other. And I think when it comes to mother-daughter relationships, a lot of times you do butt heads with your mom a lot more than your father, because you both, you know, that female relationship, it's complex. And I think Greta captured that really well. I think she really captured her mother wanting her daughter to be strong and pushing her daughter, but also still wanting to like rein her in a little bit. And there's that, again, there's that, like, you want your daughter to succeed, but you also don't want her to grow up. And her mother kind of had to like mask that disappointment, blaming her for things that obviously she had no control over, but just being upset herself about it. And I think it's the recognition that humanness in everybody. I don't know. I really, the scene at the end with her mother driving away, very powerful.
Yeah. I that was,
I don't know how to explain it, but emotions you had.
That was, sorry. Do you have anything?
That's all I have to say, but that's not very well wrapped up, but just, I do think that a well done portrayal of a mother daughter.
Yeah.
Maybe a stick than normal. I think that's why it was like, it's, I don't know if I've ever, you said that was like the only time you've seen it done, or?
Well, I mean, mother daughter movies don't usually get made because mothers and daughters usually don't get to make movies.
Yeah, I can see that.
Mm-hmm. Which is very unfortunate.
Yeah,
I just asked because I the scene when they're shopping for dresses was something I've exactly seen my mother and either one of my sisters do, which is they'll be arguing about something and then on a dime they'll just start to get along. You know, like the whole, oh, you think I'm ugly, you think I'm fat, no, like, oh yeah, no, you're just saying that, oh, this looks cute. Yeah, it does. I thought that was a funny scene, and I've seen my mother and my sisters do exactly that before. But that isn't the only movie that Greta's directed. Little Women. Adam, I'm sorry, but...
So I can talk about it a bit because I have seen trailers for it. I want to see it because Lady Bird... Well, I've already wanted to see it, and then after watching Lady Bird, I only want to see it more. But unfortunately, in the current global circumstances of being in a pandemic, it's kind of hard to get out to go to the movie store. So I'm waiting. I've been considering just buying it online, but I like buying physical copies of movies. Anyway, I really want to see it, but go ahead. Say your pieces.
So if Lady Bird connected to me on a situational and emotional level, Little Women connected and resonated with me as a writer and as a creator. I think that is the heart of the movie, which is these women creating and wanting to create. But also there's this element of emotion there too about love and relationships. So there's a lot going on there. Tess, do you want to start out while I kind of collect my thoughts?
Yeah, I think it is I liked that it was a modern difficulty. It's still something that happens today. It's at least not, I mean, women can now work, be married and still work, but the difficulty of being a mother and still working is very hard to balance that life. And you sometimes have to give up something. You have to give up a career sometimes, be a mother. So I think Jo's difficulty of feeling like she wants to be an independent woman, wants to be from the shackles of marriage and of love, but then she feels that she also does feel lonely, and there is part of that. And part of, she does feel lonely, and that's something that she's annoyed and angry with and wishes that writing could fill the void of that, but there's always going to be something that doesn't feel complete. And it's such a human thing. It's such a human problem, especially a female problem. And I really like that because I've never seen that expressed in a movie before, of that difficulty of career, of like figuring out of your own talent and passion, but also still feeling passionate towards another, like having love that way, but also wanting to pursue, find yourself. It's just, it's very, as a woman, that's very difficult. And I think that was captured very well in that movie. And I think, I won't say what the ending is, but I think the way that the ending's portrayed does that very well. And I like how they all find all the female characters find themselves in a way. It doesn't necessarily follow, they all find themselves in different ways. And it doesn't have to.
Mm-hmm. I really liked, like you said, the exploration of like the want to find your own passion, but like also the like grappling that with loneliness, because I think there's sort of a misconception in pop culture right now that a strong female character means that she inherently doesn't end up with anybody, which, you know, that doesn't mean that all female characters should end up with anybody. But I thought that monologue by Joe at the end where she was saying, like, I'm sorry, Adam. She was saying,
what?
Oh, just spoilers.
Oh, a little bit. It's a book written in the 1800s.
Okay.
I know the plot.
She was saying, she was going on that tearful rant about how everybody expects her to be strong and independent and that she doesn't need a husband in life, but at the same time, she's super duper lonely and she does want that relationship, even though that means also potentially giving up the other thing that she loves in life.
I heard something of her own morals and her own personality. She doesn't want to have to pamper herself, like extinguish her flame of her childish nature and her carefree nature. She feels will be extinguished, kind of, if she does have to settle down as a wife.
Mm-hmm.
She might lose some of her freedom that way. And I think that's something that, I think that's part of why she avoids relationships generally, is because she doesn't want to. She wants to, I mean, she's a strong personality. She's a strong character and a strong person. And I think she's worried that she'll have to retract that slightly. And I think she's also seen that in her mother and her sisters of kind of being with,
yeah,
staying at home, being a mother, doing all the mother things and not feeling like she's meant for that.
I also wanted to kind of talk about the scene towards the beginning where she has the French guy read her short story, because that was a pretty realistic scene as somebody who's written things and had other people read them. Story time, I guess. I wrote a script 2 years ago that I was really excited and passionate about, and I wanted to share it with as many people as I could. So I sent it to one of my friends and I said, give me notes, because, you know, you don't always know that what you created is good or not, and you want people to give you notes so you can improve. But at the same time, you also want that kind of, even though you don't think it or realize it, you want that validation and that almost kind of ego boost. But it's not. So, like, you want them to say, wow, this is good. You want them to think it's as good as you think it is. So I sent him this script and he wrote it. And in response, I got a 5-page Google Doc with everything wrong with my script. And at the very end, he said, basically, I think this screenplay is garbage. And I didn't have an outburst at him like Joe did in the film, but like in my head I was thinking, oh, he just doesn't get it. He doesn't understand. This isn't, like, what does he know? He hasn't written anything. And seeing that in the movie was really almost like having a mirror held up to myself, because I, you know, Joe saying, like, you know, oh, you'll never write something, you'll never make anything that's meaningful, you know, like, I, like, you know, stop judging me, like, because you haven't done anything yourself. Because I think that scene can be construed as like positive on her part, and how, you know, oh, don't listen to critics, just express yourself. But I saw it more as like a negative thing on her part, or a character flaw. This wasn't meant to be something like, oh yeah, speak with your own voice, don't listen to people who critique your work. This is meant as something like, if you can't be proud of your own work, you're going to get extremely defensive when other people have the same opinion of it.
I saw it as her fear, I think, because she did know that it wasn't her best writing. She knew it because it was the kind of writing that the publication told her. They were like, we like it better if you just, you know, or they were telling her how to do the characters. They were telling her how to do it, and she doesn't really have a chance to put how she wanted it herself. And in a way, they were tampering her own spirit and her own way of writing. And I think it was like tied to that fear of losing herself, in losing her ability to be herself and her own. I mean, she obviously knew she was a decent writer and she loved writing, but she was losing her autonomy with the publication. And I think her outburst at the doctor was more more in fear of that, because similar thing with the relationship is afraid of losing her autonomy with Timothy Chalamet's character. I can't remember his name. Jonathan or something.
Laurie. That's
afraid of that. She was fearful of losing her autonomy with that. And I think similar with the writing, she knew that she had surrendered. She was desperate. I mean, she needed money and she needed a way to, you know, get her name on the map and start somewhere. She had to start there. But in doing that, she had to lose some of her control over her writing. And I think her outburst at the doctor was partly that, and maybe too partly never criticism. And she never really received any. She's always been praised for her work by her mother and probably by her sisters too. She found success in, I think she was in New York. I don't know where she was, California or something. She had found success where she was, and she was doing well there and making money, but she wasn't being true to herself. She was successful, but she wasn't being true to herself. And I think that was something she was worried about with the relationship as well. She would have been successful. She would have been not lonely. She would have been with someone, but was she being true to herself in what she was passionate about and with her writing? So I feel that that scene was kind of tying that all together. And probably too, like the fact that she had received any constructive criticism at that point, probably, and feeling insecure about her writing because it wasn't really what she knew it wasn't really what she wanted. She goes in and always has a draft, and they always mark it up, and it's basically completely different. It's not what she wants, not her writing. It's writing for the masses, for what that guy, whatever his name was, the editor wanted it to be, not really what she wanted it to be. And not really an expression of her true skills.
Yeah.
So I think
and that's something
security and fear with that. And I guess I can see.
That's something all of us.
Yeah, I think so too. I can see. I didn't think about how that thing in particular was tied to her own. Was tied to this insecurity she had about relationships too.
And I think the editor part of it is something that all of us can kind of relate to. I've certainly submitted my own writings and thought this is like an expression of myself or something that I'm passionate about, and then had an editor kind of go over it and change it up a bit and been really upset about it. I've even been that editor sometimes, and I felt bad. Like if friends come to me with scripts and I'm like, oh, let me just take a look at it. And then I'm like, oh, you know, maybe cut this part out or leave room for just visual storytelling here.
I think that the difference between what the doctor was doing with her and what the editor was doing is the doctor was giving truly constructive criticism, and the editor was just changing it completely for his own gain, what he believed, not necessarily what she believed, and not trying to help her, but trying to help himself. And I think that was the difference. I think the doctor was doing.
Yeah, and that's one scene that I have seen, the editor scene. I've now said scene too many times. But it's really well done because you can see Jo's frustration with that, and the fact that, and that's why she does, and she knows she has something good, and which is why she doesn't give up the copyright. Because she understands that, and like the frustration that the editor wants her to like marry off the characters and things. Like, you can feel the frustrations in her, you know?
Both of them have their beliefs, and they have, and he wants to do what he thinks will sell, and she wants to do what she wants to do it for the story and for her.
Exactly. Which is something, unfortunately, that a lot of creators, whether it be writers, filmmakers, or any other, have to deal with. Censorship and working with the studios, making changes, because, oh, this won't sell. This has to work in a different market, you know, whatever. There are a lot of problems. Audience.
That's the hardest. Like, you can make it as you as you want and express yourself as much as you want, but if it doesn't connect to the audience and it doesn't sell, then it's not worth anything, which sucks.
Yeah. Well, I mean, speaking of that kind of like putting yourself into things and connecting with the audience, I kind of want to compare and contrast the two creators, Noah and Greta, because I think they both do a lot of like self-evaluation in their stories, but they do it from different perspectives. Noah from a more like angry and bitter place, and Greta from a more, this is something I've been through and I'm looking back on it with having learned something, gaze. It's almost like going through something troubling in life and then being able to look back on it and thinking, I'm not going to like curl up in a ball because this is something that's popped into my mind. I'm going to look back at it knowing that I survived it and this is an experience that I've learned from.
Kind of going off that, I feel like you said, that's a really good description of what Greta Gerwig has done, especially with Lady Bird. This is something that she has been through, and I'm sure, and with Little Women as well, this is something that she has been through, but she's grown from it. Where in the case of Noah Baumbach, it seems almost therapeutic, almost, watching these. Like, you can tell this is what he's been through, and this is his way of coping and growing through making these.
I think, I agree with that. Like, I feel like Noah Baumbach is, it's more of a therapeutic type thing. Where with Greta Gerwig, he makes something new out of it, which is different than Noah doesn't.
But
I feel like Noah,
I also think that
follows in it sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I also think that Noah, his career as he goes from movie to movie is more of a sign of his growth as a person and a storyteller. Because in his early films, it was him looking back on those times with like anger. But now he makes a lot of movies with that same sort of hindsight and ability to take the positive from those experiences in his work. Like Meyerowitz and Marriage Story, as devastating as Marriage Story is, it's very mature. It's more mature than like Squid and the Whale or Kicking and Screaming.
And I think the endings kind of reflect that, where you even see there's, spoiler alert for a Marriage Story, in the ending, it's a very powerful scene. It's very sweet just because they're still friendly to each other. And like one of the final shots of the movie is, it's Nicole and Charlie?
Charlie.
Yep. Charlie. So Charlie is carrying their son, and Nicole sees that he has Charlie's shoe is untied. So she bends over and ties it for him, and because their child was asleep. And then she offers to, even though it's her night, to let him stay with him, just because. And it's even made a point earlier in the movie that she doesn't want to win. Like, there's a point where her lawyer, played amazingly by Laura Dern, she won an Oscar for it. She's talking about, oh, why don't you seek 55 and 45% child custody? That way you win. And eventually she does, but she makes a point where she's like, I don't want that, though. I don't want to win, you know? She just wants what's best for him. And I think that maturity is seen a lot more than in Squid and the Whale, where it is a lot more just raw emotions, and it's just, like, angry, like you said.
I think saying that they're friendly with each other is kind of underselling it. I thought Charlie and Nicole still love each other. They just understand that they can't
be
together.
I feel that, I think that the qualification of the idea that there can still be love even if there isn't a family. Like, even if that legally that family doesn't exist, but the love is still there between those two people, and there's still a bond there, I think is definitely growth for Baumbach, like, as a person and through as a screenwriter. Because I think his idea of love has grown, like, what he thinks love can be. And that love is either it is or it isn't, but, like, it's not. It's not just it is or it isn't. It's not black and white. When you're like watching Kicking and Screaming, the idea of that, like, once those two are separated, the distance between them, they're no longer like he, you know, there's nothing, there's no longer a connection, like the connection's gone because of the distance between them, and the love is gone and it's no longer there. And that's just such an immature way to think about it. And then you go on to Francis Ha and you see someone, it's undateable. And so this is the undateable thing, and like not being able to date or not being able to commit to a relationship, when in the end she has a committed relationship. She's committed to her roommate. Like, there is a love there, and there is a new. I love that scene where they like look at each other and you realize, oh my gosh, wait, they're looking at each other across the room. And that was just so sweet and so perfect. Such a good callback to that.
I will say this, though.
Commitment, like, doesn't need to be sexual or erotic love. It can be, it's another kind of love, you know. It can be a love between two good friends. And then you have to imagine.
I think there's a point, though, that I want to make, though. There's a point, though, about love where, so I agree with you what you're saying, and like love can be different. And when you go through something like marriage, even when you're unmarried, like you spend so much time when you get divorced, you spend so much time together and you love this person so deeply, there's still going to be something there, which you see in Marriage Story. But at the same time, I feel like it's different and maybe this is just me, but I feel like people grow apart, and like in Kicking and Screaming, again, I did not finish that movie because something had come up, but I think whether it be friends or, you know, like even a relationship at the time, if you're just in a relationship for a bit of time, or if you're just friends, like friends grow apart and it is sad, but the distance grows and you still do care for them. You still do love them.
The distance.
But it's
the distance,
but it's like
as much.
But it's different though.
The distance is like unsurmountable and like they'll never grow together again. They're completely separated in the.
But sometimes that happens though, and that's just life.
Right there. Too big of a risk to hop on a plane and go somewhere. But then you do Frances Ha and she's like, you know what? I'm gonna go to France for like 2 days. And I think that's really cool because it does show like a group of maturity there.
But then at the same time, I feel like it's more realistic to show that sometimes it doesn't work out. You know, sometimes you just lose friends and that's just And that's just part of life. And to fly to France for 2 days, which this is also made a point in the movie, is very irresponsible.
Very irresponsible and like without planning is completely unimpactful.
I think though that I agree with Adam. It's not entirely like risk. Yeah, sometimes you do drift apart from people, but Noah working through these emotions, like he kind of needed you kind of need Charlie and Nicole to still love each other by the end of Marriage Story, or else, you know, the whole movie's just sour and
bitter.
Like just horrible. Like the whole movie, you see basically them turn on each other because of this divorce, because they start out so mature about it. Like, okay, we gotta, you know, we want to make sure that everything with Henry is okay.
And they don't even want to go to a lawyer. They don't even want to get lawyers or like courts. I mean, they don't want to go to a court.
Exactly. So if he didn't show that they still loved each other by the end, you know, what would be the...
I think no matter what, they love each other, but it's just a matter of legal aspects of the idea of marriage itself and the fact that marriage doesn't... Because a marriage ends, it doesn't mean a love ends. It doesn't mean a love ends.
Mm-hmm. And that's something you've grown from, because Squid and the Whale is definitely a marriage. Where they just hate each other.
And to compare this though to Greta Gerwig, I think, like I mentioned earlier, the scene between her ex-boyfriend and her kind of has similar ideas, where yes, the romantic interest she has in him is gone, but she doesn't hate him. She's not bitter towards him for cheating or for lying. She's understanding and accepting of who he really is, and they still love each other, just in a different way.
Yeah, and that's something I think anyone can see in their own lives. You know, like I know a few friends who've, like, you know, who are still amazing friends with their exes. I was talking to one of my friends about it like yesterday. Though they had a tumultuous relationship, like it was horrible at the time, they still are on very speaking terms. And I think that's important to show, because a lot of the norm of romance is over. That's it. Like, you know, you never see them again, or you're just extremely hateful and bitter towards them, but that's not how it is in real life at all.
Right. That's unrealistic, and it's immature.
It can be realistic, but not always.
Yeah. I think it's more normal for the former to happen than the latter, or at least you'd like to hope so.
I agree with that. I do agree with that.
Yeah, these are just two very human filmmakers who really know how to tug at least my heartstrings. Even just like talking about Marriage Story and this previous discussion that we've been going through, I've been like misty-eyed the entire time, honestly. Like, that's the power that these filmmakers have on their audience.
And I also want to just point out the soundtrack / score of both of these, both these filmmakers
I
are great.
I love David Bowie on Francis.
I loved Pink Floyd in Squid and the Whale.
I was going to say my favorite, Always See Your Face by Love in Lady Bird. Great use of that song.
Oh, no, you know what? I take it back. I love the Hey You, use of Hey You in Squid and the Whale, but I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Stephen Sondheim's Being Alive in Marriage Story.
Oh, yeah.
No, yeah. That song, that scene,
that,
yeah.
That breaks me every time.
And who knew Adam Driver had such a good singing voice?
It's not even like, I mean, it's a good singing voice, but I bet it's not amazing. It's just really good, because you don't want like this amazing singer to come up and sing Being Alive, because it takes away from it. You want it to be a little bit like rough, because that's more human. Like, it's like Frank Sinatra played Charlie and he came up there and he just had this beautiful singing voice as he sang Being Alive, that wouldn't be as powerful as like Joe Schmo singing.
I mean, true. I'm just saying Adam Driver has a good singing voice. I like to sing.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think I have anything else to say about these filmmakers. I think I've said all I can. Do you two have anything else?
What are your final? What are our final points about this? Is that they're very human. They're very human filmmakers. They bring such realistic aspects of life. And also, I mean, we've seen them mature as filmmakers, and through each other, they've also matured.
Mm-hmm. They know what it's like.
Yeah.
To be alive.
Yeah.
And I said this about Noah Baumbach. I want to say this about Greta Gerwig. Utterly fantastic filmmaker. And I really, same like what I said about Noah, I can't wait to see what comes next.